fifth time in the last six seasons, the Dutch are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it! Terrific header, Callum Robinson, super ball in.
Great feeling, we have to treasure these nights.
Well, hello there, it's the RT Soccer Podcast. James is here as ever. James, the last time I saw you, you were hanging out of a TV van in Athlone. All well with you?
That makes me sound like some kind of illegal thing was going on there. It was obviously
well, you were wearing a mask
in Athlone. I was wearing a mask, yes. We have to wear a mask while we're...
It was like a B-movie, bandit-type movie thing that was going on. You had a mask on, you were hanging out of a van.
I'll take your word for it, Adrian. I'll take your word for it.
Come here, 11-0 for Dundalk against Athlone. Where do you stand on the view that was being expressed on social media that Dundalk should have eased up once it got to 5 or 6 or 7?
Don't agree with it. They're a professional outfit. They're in a cup semi-final. They have to play the way they're playing. It's just, you can only play against the opposition in front of you. And as well as that, it gives several players a lot of confidence going into their scoring goals and stuff like that as well into a final. And what is going to be a really, really busy week for Dundalk with the match on Thursday and then the cup final on Sunday. I'm sure they're happy that nobody came out of the game with any major niggle or anything like that as well. But no, you're a professional outfit in a cup semi-final and you've just got to be professional, and that's what they were.
Yeah, but we've seen it before with professional teams where they hit, you know, 6 or 7 and you sort of say to yourself, well, they could score more here, but they just knock the ball around and play down the clock and avoid injuries. Could that have been done?
That could have been done, but then if you're just going to do that, what you might actually do is aggravate the team you're up against if you're just going to start playing around between each other and knocking the ball around, which then could end up with an injury happening or an off-the-ball incident happening where you get a yellow card and you get suspended for the cup final. So I think the only way they could do it was just keep at the pace they were at. And I think I've no qualms with that, none whatsoever.
Okay, well, let's get another view off of that lone man and a former Dundalk player, Robbie Benson. Robbie, you'd know the mindset of that Dundalk dressing room. In your day, would you have eased up?
The score was so high so early that there's, you know, half a game to play where, you know, you're 5 or 6 up already. So it is difficult to artificially manufacture a game that you don't score any more goals. So you kind of have to keep going. But as I was saying to you off air, the thing that would be in my head as a Dundalk player last night was just to get through the game without exerting as much energy as I could with a big week coming up with a game on Thursday in Molde and then the cup final obviously then on the Sunday.
And as an Athlone man, how do you feel for the Athlone players today, because they were on the end of a crushing result? You know, the bulk of the squad are very, very young. Adrian Carberry's trying to build something there. They have a great setup in terms of the facilities at Lissy Wullen. That's a terrific setup, but for the players on the end of a hiding like that, in terms of, you know, the damage it does to, you know, in terms of your, you know, personal confidence in football?
Yeah, it's very tough to be on the end of a scoring like that and to be up against players that you're a little bit inferior to at the start of your career. I was there myself playing that loan. I was on the end of a couple of heavy defeats in my time there when I was young. But those kind of defeats shape you as well to kind of... you know, see the level that you aspire to get to. And, you know, that Dundalk team are, you know, one of the best teams that's ever played in the league. So you have to take as much as you can out of it as a young player in a dressing room like that after the game. And I'm sure that's the message that Cadzi would have been saying to the team.
Barry McNamee is also with us, Barry of Finn Harps. Barry, your thoughts on this? Should Dundalk have eased up, or is it all about being professional and doing what's required?
I suppose, like, from their point of view, they were there to do a job, and, you know, I suppose the game was over maybe after 15-20 minutes, and, you know, they could have eased up, but I suppose for them it was easier just to play. Like, you know, it would have been nothing for them just to go and keep the ball at the back, so they just had to go and do things right and be professional, and, you know, that's what they done. Obviously the score then wasn't anyway, great for Athlone, but as Robbie was saying there, them boys have to learn from it and bounce back.
Well, listen, we're going to chat about the cup final that looms, the holders Shamrock Rovers against Dundalk. Also, the women's national team, they've got to roll the dice against the mighty Germany with qualification for the Euros on the line. And we'll reflect on the goings-on in the Premier League with Guy Swinnells. But Barry, you've signed on the dotted line for Finn Harps. You clearly enjoyed, you know, you're a Donegal man, you're with Finn Harps for the season just passed, and you've committed to the club for next year as well.
I will. No, enjoyed it as much as I could. Like, I don't know, I don't want to speak for everyone in the league, but I can't imagine there'd be too many players in the league this year would say they enjoyed what was going on. No, the delays in the game, obviously, whatever it was, 3 or 4 months without any football, and then training away, having games called off at the last minute, and no games for 2 or 3 weeks. And no, it was obviously a tough year for everyone involved, no crowds, whatever, but no, I think especially the last month of the season, we've done very well. I think we won 3 of our last 4 to stay up, and all being good, that most of the boys will sign back again, and we can try and kick on for the next year.
Barry, have to go back to the Cup quarter-final. What was going through your heads when 3 penalties in 4 minutes?
I suppose, obviously Shamrock Rovers are the best team in the league. I've heard people using the excuse, the pitch wasn't great and all, but at the same time, they were up 2 weeks before, and the game shouldn't even been played. The pitch was far worse, and they'd done the job that day, so the pitch in our heads didn't really matter. And I think we were comfortable at half time. Knew they were going to come out, and but at the same time, you never think things like that are going to happen to you in a football match, but we didn't react quick enough, and before we knew it was too late.
And are Rovers the best team you've come up against this year? How would you put them and Dundalk beside each other?
Obviously, the league table doesn't lie. What is it? Out of the 18, I think they won 15 and drew 3, so they're clearly, they've set the standard this year, but obviously in a cup final, say the form book was out the window, and obviously Dundalk had the big game on Thursday night. They're going to have to try and prepare for 2 games, but it's going to be interesting. A one-off game, you would never write Dundalk off, but as I said, I think Shamrock Rovers have been the best team throughout the year.
Robbie, from your viewpoint, we'll come on to the Cup Final in a little more detail in a few moments, but from your point of view, Barry obviously referenced there the season just passed. I mean, it was very disrupted, of course, because of COVID, and COVID continues to hang over the world as things stand. How did you find it, with matches, being postponed or deferred or delayed, and of course the long gap post-March as well? Was it hard then to get up and running again when the league resumed, or how did you find it?
Yes, of course, it's very difficult when a season is stop-start, and I think as well we found it, for us, we put 2 wins together in the middle of the season, and then we declared test positive for COVID, so our whole team had to go into a 2-week quarantine, so we couldn't train together as a team, and it disrupted us. And our next game was against Harps, in a big game for us with our ambitions to qualify for Europe, and it kind of stopped our rhythm a bit, and we lost the game. So but look, that's the way of the world is, the way the world is now, and you can have interruptions like that and just have to deal with it. But hopefully now we can get I think maybe next year, with the fact that when the country was in the level 5 lockdown, that the league kept going, hopefully we can get a full season at 36 games next year. That would be the plan, I'm sure, for all teams.
Yeah, and when you did get to play, did you enjoy playing under Stevie O'Donnell, one of your old teammates at Dundalk?
Oh yeah, it was
you
great.
Have to I say really yes.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the season, and It was a learning experience for ourselves this year. We're a young team in our development, even though I'm, an experienced player now. So, I think there was a great buy-in from the players into what the management wanted, and I think we really improved as the season went on, and I hope that that continues into next year, and we can develop even further.
Robbie, when you clicked, you really clicked really well as a team. It was just unfortunate. It just seemed to be up and down as far as performances were concerned. And one of those times where you did click really well was your goal against Dundalk, which, well, I think it was only about a minute after you went behind against them, but it was a really, really good quality team goal, which you finished off and seemed to enjoy very much so with your celebration after.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great team goal. I think, it's those couple of minutes, I'm sure, when you go in front, those couple of minutes after you score, you have to be really secure and to see those minutes through. And thankfully, we were able to breach Dundalk and score. But when we did click, we were on song. And I think anyone who could analyze our games, especially towards the back end of the season, could see that we were the dominant team in a lot of the games, and especially the last, you know, our last three, I suppose, maybe to sum up our season, our last three against Dundalk, Rovers and Bowes, I would feel we were the better team in all three, but we only came away with 2 points. So I think that kind of sums up the way our season went overall. But I think there was probably more games that we played very well and didn't come away with points than games that we didn't play well and won. So I think hopefully next season, you know, that can balance itself a bit more and we can win a lot more games.
And Barry, for you, you mentioned the disappointment of the cup exit and the manner of it to Shamrock Rovers, but the league, the way you finished the league and survived and avoided the playoffs, it was a some running by Ollie and everybody involved.
It was no, especially Ollie and Higgsy, like the two boys in charge. Like, no, I'm sure they're probably traveling the country now looking for players. Like, no, the time and effort they put in, and to be fair to the players, no, for when we come back after the break, no, we just didn't put things together. No, for one reason or another, we lost games we shouldn't have lost, and no, we let a lot of points slip. But no, whenever the push came to shove, like, no, I think we won away in Bowes. Beat Pat at home, beat Waterford at home, and it was a tough one now in Shells. Like, no, they were done fairly well coming out, and no, just kind of struggled at the finish line, and no, to be fair, we took advantage of that.
And from everybody involved with Finn Harps, I know we had Ollie on the podcast there, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and from his point of view, he wants to get to a situation where it isn't an annual case of Finn Harps battling against the drop. Do you think he can drive on next season? Will the budget be there for Ollie to strengthen the squad sufficiently to avoid a scenario, you know, that's been the case for Finn Harps in the last couple of years in terms of continuously fighting relegation?
I suppose no. I don't know whether the budget will be there or not. But no, to be fair to the, you know, the board members up here, like, they're consistently fundraising, you know, and trying to find ways to increase the budget for Ollie. And no, I suppose it's always going to be hard whenever you're up here. You always have the travel expenses and all that there that come with it. No, travelling to Dublin for all the games, food and all that there. Like, you know, that most of the Dublin teams not necessarily don't have, but not to the same extent. And no, it's obviously going to be hard, but no, I'm sure, as I said before, like, he'll leave no one, no stone unturned and go and search for players. I'm sure he'll be ringing players now that might not play in the league in a couple of years. It's just the way he is. He tries everything, and now there's no better man to try and drive him forward anyway.
Barry, is he as enthusiastic with you guys as he is when he does interviews?
I suppose like all the fans know around the league love him. No, he's great to chat to, just as a person as well. He'd do anything for his players. He's great. He's a wee bit negative out in the public eye, but no, he definitely expects a lot of us, you know, in the change room. And no, to be fair, he puts a wee bit less pressure on you from what he says in the media and stuff like that there. But no, as far as putting in the hours and the days he goes travelling looking for players, no, he's first there. Training, last to leave, and I'm trying to hold down a full-time teaching job. So, you know, as I said, I don't think there's a man puts in as many hours as him anyway.
No, he covers so much ground, he really does. Well, listen, the best of luck with 2021. Hopefully we'll get the league up and running, as many fans are hoping to get a start date very soon, and I'm sure players... Actually, any indication, Robbie, and, you know, when you might be resuming training or what the target date is for the start of the league, or have you heard anything?
No, sure, there's no... you know, we're as in the dark with everyone else. I'm sure we'll hear when there's an announcement from the FAI or what have you, when the league will resume, and then we can make plans for then when we'll be back training, which is difficult for all the clubs, especially with a lot of players as well out of contract, yeah. You know, not knowing when the season's going to start again, when you expect to be back training. It's difficult for most clubs to make plans, I'm sure.
Okay, well, let's chat about the cup final, but before we do, let's get some reaction to the semi-finals. Athlone Town 0, Dundalk 11, the biggest winning margin in the history of the FAI Cup. One of the stars of the show for Dundalk, Patrick McElhinney.
Look, it was a professional performance tonight, and really looking forward to the final now. It's going to be a proper game.
Any sympathy at all for Athlone? I'm a very young team, and, you know, they put up a brave performance.
Of course you do. Like, you could see them during the game. You know, they're a lot of young faces, and I'm sure they'll probably learn from it. And you're right. Like, it is a hard one to take for them, I suppose.
next Sunday. Obviously, you've got to go to Norway in between, but the cup final again. Yeah. The Aviva is almost your second home against the club who took your league title.
It's a great achievement to get there again. I think it's a final everybody looks for. We'll definitely be ready. It's going to be, I'm sure it's going to be a dinger game, yeah.
Patrick McElhinney amongst the goal scorers for Dundalk in that 11-0 win over Athlone Town. Another Derryman on the mark was Aaron McInniff. He scored twice as Shamrock Rovers defeated Sligo Rovers 2-0 at Tallaght Stadium. Interestingly, Greg Bulger made his return after his leg break during the course of the summer, and afterwards he spoke to RTÉ Sport.
Yeah, it's been a long road. A bit emotional there, to be honest, because it was a hard 5 months of being out. So I'm just absolutely delighted and thrilled to get back on the pitch. And I'm buzzing, to be honest. Yeah.
When your number came up and Cronin said you were coming on, what was the feeling?
I don't know. It was a weird one. Obviously, the last 2 weeks I've trained really well. It was at the start of my injury. It was hard. You know, there was days where I was thinking, oh, will I want to get back? But I stayed positive, and I'm just thrilled to get back and have that butterflies in your stomach coming on. And it was a nice feeling, to be honest.
As a professional footballer, you know, the injuries are part and parcel of the game as well. But yours was quite a serious one, wasn't it? Take us through it.
Yeah, no, look, I broke my leg, basically. Broke my fib and had to get a plate and 6 screws in. And there wasn't really a time frame on it. It was a case where we see how we go with it. Obviously, I had to get an operation and stuff. So for me to be here 5 months later on the pitch, trying to help the lads to a final, I'm just thrilled, you know. Because obviously, like I said, it was tough times. It was a bit of a learning curve as well, watching games from the stand and picking up different things and what you could do when you're on the pitch. Because when you're in the thick of the action, you probably might look at it that way. So, you can see a smile on my face. I'm delighted, yeah.
Like, it's been a strange year, obviously, for everybody all around. No fans in. The fact is that, you know, we've got COVID and all that's come with it as well. But it's added to it, the fact that this injury was there for you as well, and you had to work on it as well. So how difficult was it to get yourself rehabilitated?
Yeah, look, I'm in good hands. I'm in good hands here at Shamrock Rovers, you know. Alan Byrne and Tony McCarthy, like, were looking after me and stuff. But there was times it was hard. There was times I was kind of half doubting, will I get back? What way will it go? You know, I've been lucky enough over my career not to have many injuries, any injuries really. A few niggles here and there, what do you get? But doing it, and obviously so late in my career, it was first time I experienced that. So it was tough. But I like to think I'm mentally strong, so I stayed positive, and I'm just delighted to be out here. Yeah.
And that's the one thing about a player as well, is that you've got to work on the injury and the rehabilitation yourself, don't you?
Yeah, you know, you do. There was times there I had to do a lot of stuff on my own, going out doing things in the cold, the wet. And there was times, obviously, with the restrictions, you can only do so much. No gym work, you kind of had to make up your own kind of things to do. So it was tough times. But look, there's a lot of people worse off than myself, so it was just one of them where I was like, just do the best I can and see where it goes. And like I said, I'm just grateful to be back out on the pitch.
Sure, and obviously you'd be hopeful to be part of the matchday squad for next week, aren't you?
Yeah, that's the aim. And the gaffer was kind of, he wasn't probably sure if he was going to use me today or whatever, but me probably being too stupid, I was saying, yeah, I'm ready. But it's one of them now where, like, obviously it was kind of slow at the start, getting back in the running and stuff. It was a bit slow, but there's been a spurt, and I've kicked on and everything's going well, touch wood. And look, I said to the gaffer today that if you need me, I'm available. And I say it'll be the same case next week. Yeah.
Does a thing like that help you develop as a person, as a man, as a player?
Yeah, I think so. Like I said, on the football side of things, it was a kind of learning curve for me watching games from stands, because when you're in the thick of the action, you probably just take things for granted and stuff. So probably watching for them few months in the stand, watching the boys do so well, it was hard, don't get me wrong, because I wanted to be out there helping them. But you learn different things and you probably appreciate it. And then even just being around the dressing room where you're in, you know you're not playing, and just geeing up lads and still staying positive. And I always thought, like, I'm going to be that person. So it was kind of great. And I think the, like, Gaffer and the staff have been great with me as well, and they've noticed that as well, and they've obviously said it to me a few times. So the way it was, because it's hard, you could be down, you could be, you know, trying to bring people down with you because you're not in a good place. But I stay positive, and like I said, yeah, I'm just happy to be out here.
Sure. And you can see the difference, I suppose, yourself now, because you're a team player and you're geeing up players, as you say yourself. You can imagine how difficult it is for it to be an individual sports person to have to do that all on their own.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm lucky. Like I said, I'm lucky to be at Shamrock Rovers, like with Tony McCarthy and Dr. Alan Byrne, you know, looking after me and stuff and doing the best they can for me. And they do the best for every player. So I'm lucky in a way that I'm here, and the way it went, and anything that I wanted or tried or needed, they helped me. So I'm lucky. And then obviously with the players, the group of lads we have here, team spirit is brilliant. So you know, they're always, if you need an arm around you, everyone was kind of there for you. So Yeah, so individual sport, you find it hard, I suppose, yeah.
Very insightful interview with John Kenny and Greg Bulger. Robbie, you know what it's like having to come back from a long layoff because of injury. You could hear in Greg Bulger's voice there, he's absolutely buzzing and he wants to be involved in the Cup final squad next week, but great for him to be back.
Yeah, exact same injury we suffered actually. So I was in touch with Greg at the beginning when he first suffered the injury. So yeah, just hearing all the emotions that he went through, you know, it brought me back to the time I spent out last year. So in the same sense, I was back earlier in the season, but I got to play in the Cup final at the end of the year. So I'm sure that was on his mind probably for the whole time he was out. And it's great to see. You never want to see any player in the league suffer a bad injury like that. So, You know, it's great for him. It's great for him to be back for sure.
Yeah. How difficult was it for you to get back to full fitness?
Oh, it was tough. Oh, it was incredibly tough. As Greg said there, you learn a lot when you're sitting in the stand, and you learn a lot about yourself. You know, you deal with coming back, and very tough time. You go to some tough places in your head, but thankfully out the other side now, and haven't had any setbacks since.
Well, on to the Cup final. Robbie, obviously Dundalk this week, they're off to Molde in Norway for the game on Thursday. They return and they've got a Cup final on Sunday, 6:40 kickoff. It'll be live on RT Radio, also on RT2 Television. Shamrock Rovers, they've had a kinder schedule in terms of time to prepare. Which is preferable?
Well, I'm sure if you were to choose the preparation you'd have for the Cup final by itself, you'd obviously prefer to have Shamrock Rovers set up their preparations with a full week leading into a game. But I'm sure if you offered the Shamrock Rovers players and the team to be involved in the game, an Europa League game on a Thursday, they'd take that as well. So it's positives and negatives to each. But in terms of who's going to win on Sunday, definitely the advantage in the preparation will be Shamrock Rovers.
That's the issue for Dundalk, isn't it, Barry, that the matches have been coming thick and fast between Europa League and Cup games and the conclusion of the league. There's been no let-up for Filippo Givagnoli. It's basically game, recover, and on you go.
Yeah, I suppose that's the cost to come with being successful. I suppose nobody expected the league and the Cup to drag out this long, and they obviously thought they would have done by now. But as I said, they'll have no problem getting ready going to Norway this week and coming back and preparing for a Cup final. It's what they wanted out of their season, and you know, the professionalism they showed over the last 6-7 years, the players that are there, unless them any concern, they'll do what they can and they'll be ready for Sunday regardless of what happens on Thursday night.
Yeah, I'm just looking here. James Rogers tweeted earlier on about the week that Dundalk are actually going to have. So Monday this morning they're training, so it's probably more of a recovery training. Tuesday they fly off to Norway. And Wednesday, the pre-match training in Molde. Thursday is obviously the match against Molde. They return to Ireland on Friday morning. Saturday is when they get to prep for Rovers, and then the Cup final on Sunday. So I don't think you could get much of a busier week ahead of a Cup final, in fairness to them. So yeah, I'd say if you're a manager, you much, much, much prefer the Rovers week ahead.
Oh yeah, and to be honest, I'm not even referring so much to the week ahead. It's just the fact that Dundalk have been playing so many matches. I mean, Shamrock Rovers wrapped up the league title several weeks ago, so they've had plenty of time to... And I guess as well, and I'll put this to Robbie, I don't know if you got to see the Shamrock Rovers Sligo Rovers game, but Shamrock Rovers didn't really have to move out of second gear to win that match. So they've been perhaps in the comfort zone for a couple of weeks, and I'm just wondering, is that a dangerous thing heading into a Cup final?
Yeah, we probably suffered with that last year with Dundalk, where we had the league wrapped up quite early, and the remaining games that aren't of much of a consequence and have much competitiveness to us, and maybe we suffered a little bit from that in the final against Rovers last year. So I'm sure the Rovers players and staff will be aware of that fact. But going back to the Molde game, I'm sure, I don't think there's anyone who wouldn't want to be playing in that game from the Dundalk side on Thursday. So as long as they're having to go to Molde, you know, and play a Europa League game, you know, there's worse things that could be happening before a Cup final than going and playing at a level like that, really.
Yeah. In terms of the final, Barry, we heard there from Patrick McElhenney a few moments ago. He was absolutely electrifying against Athlone. Just his touch, his range of passing. You'd know him very, very well. He's going to be a key player for Dundalk in the final on Sunday. There's so many vital players for both sides, but his form coming into a final is a real positive for Dundalk, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Like, I suppose you only have to look at the Shamrock Rovers team. You had Jack Byrne, Graham Burke and Aaron McInniff were all kind of involved with the Irish team there in the last friendly they had, or it was in the Apex Nations game, I can't even remember. But no, but for me, like, I've known Pat for got to 10 years now, and when he's on it, there's nobody in the country that can touch him. So he obviously has that ability, and between him, Michael Duffy, the connection they have, like, they are obviously gonna cause Shamrock Rovers a lot of problems. But as I said, like, for me, Shamrock Rovers have been the best team in the country this year, and with the preparation they have compared to Dundalk, with all the travelling involved with Dundalk and everything else, I can't see past Shamrock Rovers up in the trophy again this year.
So you're nailed on for Shamrock Rovers in 90 minutes?
Yeah, I would say no. It's hard to predict extra time and all, but I don't think there's going to be much in the game. But I do think with the Dundalk have a big enough squad, but I can't imagine there'll be much chopping and changing between the two games. And maybe the fitness will tell in the second half. Come back to your point there with Shamrock Rovers maybe coasting into this, as I say, but obviously the league wrapped up, but they still went about their business and won two out of their last three league games, won the cup final or cup quarter final and semi final. So they're not gonna be easing into this year. They've been as professional as they have been all season, even after they'd already won the league, so I can't see them letting up now.
Robbie, as you well know, it went all the way to penalties last year. How do you see it playing out this Sunday? I know it's very, very difficult to foresee what might happen, but what's your best guess on it?
Yeah, it's going to be a cagey game for sure, and I think every cup final I think has gone to extra time, bar one in the last four or five. So it's definitely going to be tight. I'd say Shamrock Rovers will probably be the bookie favourites, and rightly so. But I suppose I'll have to go for a Dundalk win on Sunday.
I'm kind of with you. I think I just have a sneaky feeling that Dundalk might do it this time around, but we'll see. Stephen Bradley, James, talking about an unbeaten double, which hasn't been done since 1925. Which side of the fence are you sitting on?
I don't know, I'm just hoping it's going to be a very good game. And like, if we're talking about records, like last night, the 11-0, the previous record before that was obviously the 12-2 you were talking with Barry earlier on about, which Aaron McInniff scored two goals in as well. So he scores two goals in the semi-final. He scored two goals in that game. I think he is going to be a pivotal player for Rovers. I think the same way that hopefully Patrick McElhenney will be a pivotal player for Dundalk. I think the two of them are well pitted against each other. I actually don't know which way to go here, to tell you the truth. I think it's going to be really, really close. I'd probably slightly go with Dundalk. I think they're slightly better balanced, even though they have to come back from Mull on Thursday. But it's going to be a really, really close game.
All right, lads, we leave it there. Robbie Benson and Barry McNamee, many thanks for joining us on the RTE Soccer Podcast. James, the women's national team in action against Germany. Before we come on to that, Northern Ireland can also qualify tomorrow.
Yeah, they can indeed. It's absolutely brilliant to see them in a position where, at the moment, they're sitting second on 11 points, just ahead of Wales, who are also on 11 points. But they play the Faroe Islands tomorrow. It's actually a later kickoff than the Republic's game. A win there will see them secure second spot in that group. And it's absolutely wonderful to see the two women's teams, two senior women's teams on the island, both pushing for a championship place. And it'd be just brilliant if results go both their ways, and we get two teams just for women's sport, women's soccer on the island. It'd be absolutely wonderful if both of them were in the championships.
Yeah, certainly would. Well, Vera Poe's women's team taking on Germany, 5 o'clock at Talla Stadium. It's live on RT2 television. Karen Duggan will be part of the RT coverage. She joins us on the line. Karen, first of all, congratulations on winning the league title with Piemont.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it was a tough one to get over the line, but so delighted that we could do it last week against Shells. It was winner takes all, so it was very exciting, kind of a nerve-wracking match. They definitely had the better of the play in the first half, but we grounded out, and yeah, delighted to get over the line with that one.
And again, you played your part, because as you say, it was a winner takes all match. You had to come from behind, and yourself and Anya amongst the goals, but your goal was key. Of course it was.
Yeah, deadly from half a yard out. Megan Lynch literally put it on my head. It would have been harder to miss. So I know it was nice to get on the score sheet. Obviously, Anya really stepped up as well, taking on that free kick and giving us the kind of goal that settled us in the end. She really put in a captain's display, and I was happy to be able to play a small part in that.
Well, Kilkenny may have lost out in the hurling, but at least a Kilkenny lass has played her part in winning a national title. So well done. Well done, you.
Thanks, civilian. Thanks so much.
And it could be a double yet.
Hopefully it would be. I'm waiting for that one for a long time. This will be my sixth cup final, and I'm yet to bring home a winner's medal. So hoping to be on the right side of the result this time. But Cork have really put in some big displays recently. They're really the team that have stood out in terms of improvement this year, so we'll take nothing for granted going into that match. It's going to be a really tough one, but something to look forward to. Again, it's really the showpiece at the end of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. It's live on RT television and also on RT radio on Saturday week. But let's go to the task at hand for the women's national team against Germany. I mentioned the kickoff time, 5 o'clock, Tallaght Stadium, live on RT2 television. The final match of the campaign for Vera Poe and for the Irish women's team. Effectively, Karen, they just have to produce the match of their lives and beat Germany to try and grab a playoff spot, as you'd expect Ukraine to beat Montenegro. But it's a big, big ask, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a huge ask, and it would be one of those kind of miracle games if Ireland can pull it off. We kind of spoke before the last match, and we were saying that it's similar, that they'd have to put in the performance of their lives. And to be fair to them, in the second half, they really did apply themselves. But Germany were so ruthless at the start of that game, and they scored so early that it was always going to be a hard task for Ireland to get anything out of that. If they can keep the Germans out for the first half, if they can get in their faces and maybe disrupt them a little bit, Germany, who are already through, maybe might take the foot off the gas. It's not a very German thing to think that they will do that, but it will take something like that for Ireland to get a result out of this match.
Yeah, and the problem for the Irish is that the Germans are just so hungry. 7 wins from 7, 43 goals scored, 0 conceded. They beat Greece 6-0 on Friday. And they've young players coming through all the while. Laura Freigang scored a hat-trick on Friday. It's just her third international game. So they've players all the time willing to come in and then try and impress to nail down a place in what is a very competitive squad. And that's the big issue for Ireland, isn't it? It's just the German way of doing things.
Yeah, it's frightening to think that they have these girls coming in off the bench, really young girls that are coming through. In the last World Cup, they were maybe a little bit in transition, but they seem to have just hit their stride in this campaign, and they have been just steamrolling their way through this group with ease, it has to be said. And even if they don't play the likes of Pop, who has been their kind of talisman for so long, they have the likes of, like you said, Forberg to come in and get a hat-trick. And it's going to be a really tough task. I don't think Ireland can go out and try and just win this game, even though they need to do that. They really, really have to try and frustrate the Germans, play a really low block, and then try and hit them on the break. But they'll know what the task is at hand. They know themselves that the Ukraine game, you could tell from the reaction after the game, that there were tears after that game. That was the game that they thought would bring them to the next level, and unfortunately it didn't happen. This is a Hail Mary effort, but you know, those are the kind of ones that can come through. You never, when you've nothing to lose, you can go for it, and hopefully they can do themselves justice now tomorrow night.
What do you expect, James?
I expect, you know what, the last time that Ireland played Germany in Tallaght Stadium, they were rank outsiders as well, and really, really put it up to the Germans. You could almost say, actually, at that stage, the Irish team wasn't as good as they are now, as far as where they're playing across this team, playing in England, playing in Germany, playing here at home. They have a good squad of really, really talented players in the Irish setup now, and they pushed Germany back down in Tallaght really, really close. And I think, I know we're talking about Germany had the players looking for a place in that side to go to the championships, but I don't think they'll be at it as much as they would have been now that they're completely qualified. So I think there is a chance there for Ireland. I'm not writing either Ireland off whatsoever. I think there is a chance there. They get a result in Tallaght, and then what better way to do it than actually qualifying at home in Tallaght against Germany.
And Karen, what about the loss of the Megans, Megan Connolly and Megan Campbell? How significant are those two, the absence of those two?
Yeah, it was really encouraging to see Megan Campbell back in the squad. I think that just even the throw-in alone would leave pressure so much on the back line, and I think that at times Ireland will need to do that. They will just need bit of reprieve and kind of hit the ball long. So it's unfortunate that they've lost that, but Ireland have been playing this whole campaign without Megan Campbell, so it won't really disrupt them too much. Megan Connolly, on the other hand, has put in some really, really good displays. I saw it against Germany, actually, away. She put in a really stellar performance. She's been so fit and really putting herself about the place. But for me, I thought that Niamh Fahey definitely should have been playing against Ukraine. I think her experience, her ability to get on the ball would have really, and pick out a killer pass, may actually have served them well and may have changed the game against Ukraine. And I fully expect her to come in and take up a central position tomorrow in place of Megan Connolly.
And you were a little disappointed in your post-match analysis of the Ukraine game that Vera didn't make changes earlier in the match.
Yeah, I think that they knew that was the game that they had to win. And while Ireland were playing well enough, they really weren't threatening the goalkeeper as much as you would have liked. I thought that we really needed to do something to spark into life. The Ukrainians played the exact way I expected them to. They went down at every opportunity. They frustrated the life out of Ireland, didn't really let them get any attacking flow in the second half when we really needed to push on. So while the Ukrainians weren't threatened, I don't think Ireland were really peppering the goal enough, and I think that we did just need to switch it up. I think even putting Katie McCabe through a central role, getting her running at players, I think she could have drawn more fouls. Possibly if they hadn't got the penalty in the first half, they might have been awarded one in the second half. So I would have just liked to have seen a bit more bravery in that game, considering that really was the one that we had to win. So I don't think we can afford to wait that long today, even though it might be too little too late. But like you said, anything can happen. The Germans may take their eye off the ball, and we do have the players that can hurt them in attack.
Yeah, so the approach tomorrow, you mentioned it already, you know, sit in, frustrate, contain, hit them on the break. Is that, in your view, the best way to go about it against the Germans?
I do, because you have to be realistic and look at the goals that the Germans have put up. If Germany go 1 or 2 nil up, Ireland won't be able to take that back. Ireland, apart from the Montenegro games, haven't been putting up huge scores. That's not what our massive strength is. Our strength is very much in defence. We're strong from set pieces. I would definitely be looking at executing a few of those, trying to hit Louise Quinn on those ones. Katie McCabe has an unbelievable delivery, as we know. So that's a big threat for us. Pace up front, Leanne Kiernan has frightening pace. If Amber Barrett's on the pitch, she's always a threat on the break as well. So I think that will be the approach. But you never know, Vera might have a different thing in mind. She will have studied the Germans in their more recent games and will have come up with a game plan for this. They've been together for almost 10 days now in the lead up to this game. So they'll be well versed on what they have to do, and I'll be looking forward to seeing what they do. But I do think first 20 minutes we can't really afford to concede.
Okay, Karen, many thanks. Karen, of course, will be part of the RTE panel. The game live on RTE2 television, kickoff at 5 o'clock. The Irish women's national team taking on Germany. Now then, to the Premier League. We're joined by Guy Swindles. Guy, good to have you with us. I gather we're interrupting your toast eating. You're a man who likes toast of a Monday.
Monday has to be toasty, absolutely. No, I do like a bit of toast to get things going. So, yeah, I'm sitting here watching the steam gently finish as it gets colder and colder because I completely mistimed my toast this morning.
I presume you're a toast everyday man. You sound like a toast everyday man.
Yeah, I shouldn't, but I do. Yeah, I am a toast everyday. But I'm very good. I have muesli first, but then it has to be toast.
Oh, good on you. Yeah, good on you. I think everybody's... You know, everybody loves their toast. James, are you a toast man?
I am a toast man. I'm a brown toast man all the way with a nice bit of Kerrygold on it. But I'm interested about this muesli before toast now. Muesli before toast. Double crunch.
Oh, really? You'd go muesli post toast?
Oh, you couldn't do toasted before me. I don't know. That's kind of like I don't know. It's a bit strange. Bit strange, there, guy.
Okay. Yeah. Radical.
James,
radical
we'll have to have you up in front of the editorial board again. A couple of weeks ago, you gave a clear and obvious plug for St. Mel's Brewery, and now you just plugged Kerrygold.
It was the first word that came into my head.
Absolutely shameless. There's no level to which you will not stoop below.
No, none whatsoever.
Okay, moving swiftly on with apologies to other brands. Guy Swindles, what did we talk about before VAR came along? Liverpool at the centre at the weekend of so many VAR decisions. What did you make of it?
I know. It, back in the old days when we just had to talk about football, the programmes must have been so much shorter. Because, yeah, you're absolutely right. Now in the land of VAR and Liverpool on the receiving end of three decisions, all of which went against them at the weekend. I have to say the offsides, tight but right, and they now seem to have got the technology working properly for offside. But I thought the penalty, to be honest, was ludicrous. It wasn't a clear and obvious error by the referee that he hadn't given a penalty. No Brighton players were even appealing for a penalty. Robertson had tried to clear the ball. Welbeck had just jumped at the same time. He had clipped him a bit on the foot. And suddenly this is now a penalty rather than a really good piece of defending. So I'm completely baffled sometimes by, I suppose, because you now have to work by the strict letter of the law rather than the spirit, which it always used to be in. If you give one, you have to keep giving them. But it doesn't seem right, and it does disturb the flow, and it does create problems for managers and for fans and for everybody else involved.
Yeah, it seems to be that any kind of contact now inside the area is going to result in a penalty, perhaps. James, you've got strong views on all of this.
Yeah, I think the exact same as what Guy is saying there. I think it's changed compared to where we've seen it initially used in the World Cup, where it seemed to work really, really well for obvious things that maybe referees won't see. Like, I know Guy said this before about pulling and pushing between defenders and strikers in the box. That seemed to have been gone away with. I think now it's been used ridiculously, to tell you the truth. I think it's been overused. I think whoever is on the far side, I don't know what kind of panels they have looking at these in England with the Premier League, but for them to look at absolutely every incident is over-analysing a game while it's going live. Let the referee go with the game. And before this, all we heard was, oh, the referee did this, the referee did that, the referee did that. But now I think we're all back to, please let the referee just do his job. And even let him have a decision himself on it is a big thing. Like, but as Guy says, like, yes, there's one defender tries to clear a ball, clears a ball, clips a man, like, and off the offside's pointing for an offside is just it's just gone a bit ludicrous, to tell you the truth, Adrian. I think something needs to be changed because it works in other sports. It works as works in the tennis, works in, particularly in the NFL, it works really, really well. And I think that's what they have to look at. They have to look at the way other sports are using it.
I was literally just going to back that up and say that it tends to work in other sports is the review system. You get two reviews, you use them. If you get them wrong, you get them wrong. If you get them right, you get them right. So I think that could take some of the pressure off the boards who are having to review everything. And if you are going to continue to use the system we are, get some ex-players involved who actually played the game and can go, you know what, that happens in a game. I don't think that is a clear and obvious error.
Okay, well, Jurgen Klopp was clearly irked by the decisions that went against Liverpool. And then, Guy, after the game, he had another go over fixture scheduling. He's not getting too much sympathy, I would imagine, from fans from other clubs, but he had a go with Des Kelly on BT Sport about Liverpool having to play again at 12:30 on a Saturday. So Liverpool obviously involved in Champions League football during the course of the week. Do you have any sympathy with his case?
Yeah, I do, actually. And I know that the clubs not involved in Europe will say, well, it's easy for these rich clubs. They can afford to have squads that will be able to cope with all this fixture pressure. In these COVID times, there are two games every single week. And if you've travelled away on the Wednesday, to be made the 12:30 game on the Saturday really doesn't give you much time. And watching the amount of players now who are going down to muscle injuries, particularly amongst the top six teams and the teams that are playing in Europe, this is not coincidence. This is happening because of the fixture pile-up at the moment. And I do think that a little bit of leeway needs to be given. That if you have played particularly an away game in the Champions League on Wednesday, be the 5:30 game, but don't have to travel down to Brighton for a 12:30 match on Saturday. And I also am with him on the five substitutes as well. I think that you can't just keep running players into the ground. I know people will say, well, look, they don't do half the work that people working in hospitals do. But this is like a racehorse having to go three or four times a week, flat out in a long race. It just doesn't work. So I think, yes, there should be some sympathy for Klopp. He might not have gone around about it quite the right way, but I'm with him on that. And also, I think we need to get back up to five substitutes like every other major league in Europe.
Mm. And would you see the five substitutes as a long-term thing, even, you know, post-COVID, if we ever crack the COVID conundrum?
I don't see why not, to be honest. But it's a difficult one, but I do think that it's horses for courses at the moment, and certainly for this season, let's make it five and see where we are after that. Again, I can understand why. I think it was 16 clubs voted to have five substitutes, but four didn't, and it needed to be as unanimous as possible, hence his pop at Billy Wilder at Sheffield United, who said, look, for a club like us, that's difficult, so we'll go along with the three subs, please. So, yeah, but I do feel that you can't just keep running players into the ground. Things will break.
Yeah, I have to agree with this. I think that sports science has given an awful lot to professional sport over the last number of years. And, like, even as a very, 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 very amateur runner, if you go out for a 10K and you do a run for 10K, your sports tracking watch will tell you what your recovery time on that is going to be. And it's going to be somewhere between 40 and 48 hours, depending on what your fitness level's at. So to expect these guys to be away on a Wednesday evening, come home Thursday, have a recovery day, and then travel again to play at a top level sport within that hour, I think that's a bit crazy. I think where he doesn't get himself any plaudits here is just blaming the broadcasters on it. I think that's where he comes off a little bit petulant with his argument. I think his argument is all right, but his argument has to go back to the clubs themselves who decided that this half 12 kickoff was okay with them in the first place.
Top end of affairs, Guy, it's very, very tight, isn't it? Tottenham still leading the way from Liverpool on goal difference. A scoreless draw with Chelsea at Stamford Bridge yesterday afternoon. Do you envisage a situation where Spurs or Chelsea could win the title this season?
Spurs slightly more than Chelsea, I think. I think Mourinho... COVID seems to be suiting Mourinho. When Spurs play at home, he doesn't have a 60,000 crowd roaring them on. I was at the Spurs-Manchester City game the other evening, and he could play like an away team because there wasn't the crowd roaring them on, and he played it brilliantly. He just soaked up the pressure. He's got the defence brilliantly organised. He's got the line of defensive midfielders in front of that defence, and he can hit brilliantly on the break with the likes of Kane and Son. So he's got the perfect Mourinho team, if you like. To go and draw 0-0 at Chelsea, I can only imagine how pleased he really was with that result. That's a real Mourinho result. Grind out a 0-0. Chelsea don't catch you. You're still 2 points clear. And at the moment, I think it looks as if it's going to be between Spurs and Liverpool this season, unless something happens. Like, Spurs do have their squad isn't as big and it isn't as strong. And Harry Kane tends to get injured once a season for about 13 games. And when that happens, then the problems could arise. But at the moment, Chelsea are a good side. But I just think that Tottenham have a solidity about them, particularly at the back, that sets them apart. And Liverpool, we know how strong they are. And I can just see those two edging away.
OK, well, that's good news if it comes to pass for Tottenham fans in North London. But by contrast, their great North London rivals, Arsenal, they're having a rough time of it, back down in 14th position. Cup winners, of course, last season. You'd have thought, Guy, that they would have kicked on in the new season, but it's troubling times for Mikel Arteta, isn't it?
It is, but it's interesting. You keep reading articles and on social media about how Arteta's just the right man for Arsenal. He's turning things around. And you're thinking that if I was Emery, the previous manager, I might be going, well, yeah, he is turning things around, but it doesn't seem to be going in quite the right direction. Because at the moment, It's a really weird one. He realised he needed to tighten up the defence because that had been Arsenal's real problem. But their attacking had usually got them out of quite a lot of problems. But he seems now wants to play the pressing game and the counter-attacking game. So he's sort of almost caught between the devil and the deep blue sea, you feel, when you're watching him at the moment. His defence isn't quite good enough. The attack isn't quite as good as it was. Aubameyang's getting far fewer chances a game than he was last season. And you just kind of wonder what the overall long-term plan is, firstly. And secondly, I'm sure he does have a plan. Everyone rates him so much as a coach, but he obviously doesn't have the players to make that plan work. And it's going to be interesting to see, one, whether he can make the changes in personnel he needs to make that plan work, or two, whether he's given the time to do it. Because at the moment, they're playing well in Europe, absolutely superb in Europe, but at home in the Premier League, they're just not looking. Wolves outplayed them over the weekend. Wolves were much the better team, and Wolves haven't been on the greatest run recently, so it's going to be an interesting time for Arteta, I think, at the moment.
Okay. I noticed when you talked about the title race there, you talked about Tottenham and Liverpool. Manchester City, big win at the weekend, 5-0 yet again against Burnley. They're 6 points off the pace. They're, you know, round about midway in the Premier League table, 10th in fact. But would you be concerned for Manchester City and their title challenge? Because clearly they're just a little off the pace at the moment.
Yeah, I think I would, because I think that the very top teams like Tottenham, like Liverpool, one or two, Leicester, for instance, have kind of worked them out a bit. That if you can soak up the pressure and you've got a good enough defence and you have a really speedy counter-attacking front line, you can turn City around, as we saw Spurs beat them 2-0. Leicester went up and counter-attacked five times and won 5-2. So there is a problem at the heart of City at the moment. You feel that they're still going to qualify for the Champions League, and they're still going to demolish teams lower down the table and put five past them, because they can play like that. And then De Bruyne probably got the best player in the Premier League at the moment. But you just feel that there is an issue again, possibly in defence, but certainly when teams counter-attack at pace, City, suddenly there's an element of panic. And you just feel that through the season, a couple of bad results will happen because of that, and that will probably be enough to just leave them slightly off the pace compared to the top two.
OK, well, listen, we leave it there. United with a big win as well, coming from 2-0 down to beat Southampton 3-2. Guy Swindles, many thanks. Enjoy your toast. You know, you can reheat it. We'll let you back to it.
Yeah, microwave is already powering up.
James, that's about all we have time for. We'll be back next week. We'll be pouring over the coals of the 2020 Cup Final. Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk, really looking forward to it. Are you?
Yeah, it should be a great match. As we've already mentioned earlier on with the two lads, I think it's going to be a very tight game. But hopefully it'll be a quality game of football on what is hopefully going to be a great pitch in the Aviva Stadium.
Absolutely. All right, listen, we leave it there. Until next week, bye-bye.